If I told you that the average article of women's clothing is worn 7 times before it's discarded, would you look into your wardrobe and feel smugly proud of your old faithfuls? Or are you one to make room for more things by having a little Marie Kondo tidy up? My next guest has done his own small research piece on the life-changing magic of making do. And in it, posed some tricky questions like, how do we set limits when more or new is easily within reach? Ben Lesh is living in Toronto, and his article caught my eye partly due to his opening observations regarding Prince Charles. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
Your wife met the prince. Tell us what she noticed.
That's right. My wife and I were living in London, England several years ago, and my wife was working for the Prince's Foundation for Sustainable Communities. And she was at an event in the countryside and had the opportunity to meet Prince Charles, which was cool and exciting. And she came back and said, you know, it was perfectly lovely. And I noticed that he had this kind of funny habit of pointing with two fingers.
Yeah.
And also, and I thought, oh, that's interesting, maybe. But the other thing that she noted was that he was wearing a suit that was kind of visibly frayed, that had visibly been mended. So there were some signs of wear and repair. And she thought that was interesting for, you know, a member of the royal family to take the time to repair his clothing.
Do you know whether he mended it himself? Did she actually ask him about it?
I think my wife had a strong enough sense of propriety not to not to broach that subject.
Fair enough.
So, no, I mean, we can't say for sure who mended the garment. My suspicion would be that, you know, it was the royal tailor. And in fact, what we do know is that Prince Charles has patronized several Savile Row tailors over the years, some of whom are known to keep an offcut, a box of his offcuts from the suits that he has made, should he need a repair at any point in time. So it's possible that his Savile Row tailor did the patch job that my wife saw, but we're not sure.
Okay. And I wonder whether mending is popular within the royal family because there are so many heirlooms. I mean, from furniture to clothes, we saw Princess Kate with baby George wearing the same clothing that Diana and Will were wearing, for example. So you can, there is evidence that they reuse within the royal family.
That's right. The Queen is notorious for fattening and then reusing gift wrap.
Ah, really?
So there is an ethos of what you might call frugality, but it really does embody the spirit of making do, as I argue in the article.
Now, Marie, yes, no, continue. No, please continue. What were you going to say then?
Well, what's striking about Prince Charles mending his suit is, of course, that he doesn't have to. And it's this notion that, you know, the ethos of making do, the propensity to repair, to use what we have and to use it well, actually has nothing to do with how much or little money we have. So we're caught up a little bit in the notion that if you're wearing something that is frayed or torn, it's an indication of a lack of wealth, really, of status. And so Prince Charles is such a powerful example, which indicates that you know, his kind of wealth and social status are beyond question, of course. But he represents and embodies this ethos, which is a great deal of respect for the things that he owns.
Hmm. You're listening to ABC Radio Perth with Christine Layton. My guest is Ben Lesh. He's author of an article that appeared in the Canadian newspaper The Globe and Mail titled The Life-Changing Magic of Making Do. And he's from Toronto. So I know you've got an interesting take on this. And Marie Kondo has led a great band of followers into the wardrobes and cupboards and sheds with the question, does this thing I own spark joy for me? If not, it is to be thrown out or donated. Do you think our stuff really makes us happy, Ben?
I think that our stuff should absolutely not be asked that question. I think that we should not be looking for the things that we own to make us happy. If I could encapsulate this article in a sentence, it's people and not things in life that matter. And the ethos of Marie Kondo is the expectation and desire for the things that we own, ultimately to make us happy. Does this article of clothing I own or this souvenir that I brought back from a trip spark joy for me? Now, of course, some things we own will make us feel good. Of course, wearing a beautiful garment of clothing can make us feel confident and feel good about ourselves. And of course, you know, a souvenir from a trip may bring back fond memories. But fundamentally, with the things that we own, we should not be asking them to make us happy or joyful. We should be asking them to do what it is they're intended to do. And so Marie Kondo's ethos leads to the purging of the wardrobe. That's the great moment in Marie Kondo's Con Marie method, is that we thank our goods for our service, rest our hands on them, close our eyes for a moment, and then send them off to, well, that's not really Marie Kondo's concern. Perhaps they go to a secondhand store, donate it to better use. But what we know for sure is that the vast majority of the things that we discard are not put to as good a use as we would like them to, whether it's the recycling of plastics or the reuse of garments.
Mm. And the fact that we do ask our possessions to make us happy also explains why we buy more when it doesn't work. Because you're still chasing it, aren't you?
That's exactly right. You're chasing it. And if we buy clothing or buy articles of goods, whatever they are, with that notion in mind, we are always going to be asking too much, and the goods that we own are always going to underdeliver. This is the fundamental myth of consumerism, is we are always one purchase away from feeling complete, from feeling happy, from feeling whole.
Mm.
And Marie Kondo perpetuates this. If the things that you own don't spark joy, then you don't own the right things. That's the Marie Kondo ethos. Now, the ethos of make do is not to say that we should delight in throwing things away that we don't use. Now, if you have a useless thing in your home, sure, you should get rid of it. But you should admonish yourself for having purchased it in the first place.
Mm.
It is not a joyful thing to purge ourselves, because we're contributing to waste, you know, plastics in the ocean, piles of rubbish that are unrecyclable, getting shipped around the world. I mean, we have the problem here in Canada, but it is a truly global problem, of course, and one that I think that your listeners would identify with as well.
Yeah, definitely. Look, some would also argue that if our possessions are just to serve us, where's the fun? Does making do mean we need to be stingy and pragmatic about everything we own? So is fashion, for instance, out?
Yeah, it's a good question, and one of the struggles that I had in writing this article, to be honest, was reconciling it with my own inclinations and tastes. In my past life, I was a fashion journalist. I covered runway shows. I care about clothing. I pay attention to it. And the answer is, no, you don't have to be stingy. You don't have to be total pragmatic, focusing only on necessity. Because as we start to question, well, what is truly a necessity? What is a truly pragmatic approach to material goods? There is no real answer to what a necessity is. I mean, once we get beyond the very basic of a kind of burlap sack, a piece of bread, you know, anything beyond that becomes kind of subjective and not a true necessity. So really it's about being honest about what we're asking of our things. So if you have a beautiful dress that you wear to weddings and, you know, formal affairs, you can enjoy that. It should be a beautiful garment. You can spend a lot of money on it, find something beautiful. But after you've worn it to 5 weddings, look honestly at that garment and say, can I wear you to a 6th wedding? Can you continue to fulfill the original purpose for which I bought you? And more often than not, the answer is yes. But it is very common to look at that garment and say, I've worn it, people have seen me in it, you know, I'm going to get something new for the upcoming wedding. And of course, the truth is, nobody cares what you were wearing. People are not as concerned about that.
Yes.
And you know, and in that case, we find ourselves seeking novelty. And so I think we do need to tamper our appetite for novelty. And it is about not necessarily getting bored with the things we own and looking for something a little deeper, but it doesn't have to be super deep.
There was an interesting example of this in the media in Australia. Last year, I think, a presenter from a certain TV show wore the exact same thing for every single program and no one noticed. for 300 odd days. And he was more setting the example of the standards that are applied to women versus men. You know, women are always expected to wear something new and different. The same thing isn't asked of men. But it was an interesting example of the fact that sometimes people don't even care what you're wearing. It's you that kind of places that standard upon yourself.
Absolutely. I did see that news item, and I thought it was a terrific little piece. And, of course, you know, you're absolutely right. There is disparity between the expectations placed on men and women. It made it easier as a man to pare down one's wardrobe than it is as a woman. And, you know, of course, I had to stay in my lane with this article.
stay in your lane.
I think that, you know, the principle is asking of our things, you know, only what can realistically be asked of them.
Mm.
That may mean that a woman has to own more things to feel like she has what she needs, because women may be expected to own more things. That's a deeper problem, of course, but the ethos is equally applicable no matter the context.
You're listening to ABC Radio Perth with Christine Layton. My guest is Ben Lesh, who is a journalist from Toronto. He's also the partner of a design studio over there. So you're a make-do advocate, Ben. Describe how it influences your buying decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, first of all, being thoughtful at all about making purchases nowadays is already a meaningful step forward. One-click buying. I have the Amazon app on my phone, like most of the people listening to this show, I'm sure. I have Amazon Prime. I've got young children, so it is easy to buy stuff. And sometimes I'm very grateful for that. But I do always aspire to hit the pause button. Any purchase that is not, kind of diapers or food, you know, the basics of day-to-day, an article of clothing certainly, or, something for my own entertainment or leisure, I will often hit the pause button and just say, do I really want this? And wait a little bit. The other aspect of it is with my children. So I've become a very strong advocate as my children have grown and start to ask for more and more things. I have a 2.5-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Oh, yes.
You know, they're so obviously novelty-driven, and it's an evolutionary instinct to seek novelty. You know, we want to find different plant species with different, you know, nutrition, but, you know, you see it in the extreme in young kids. So at my son's 5th birthday party this summer, I hosted what I called a toy store, and it was really a toy swap. And each kid brought a handful of toys from their own cupboard that they'd grown bored with, which, for anyone who's, you know, seen a children's home, know that there's like the 3 toys that they play with and everything else gathers dust.
Yes.
And those toys, the kids are just as good. So, you know, it is not that I'm against kids experiencing joy and having fun with toys, but I am against buying my kids toys pretty much ever because there's such a surplus that's already out there.
So yeah, yeah.
Everyone brought toys to donate. We laid them out nicely in my living room, and my living room for a couple of hours became a somewhat chaotic toy store, basically, and the kids got to come in and take something. We didn't do a loot bag. We didn't add any junk to the world. And, you know, hopefully we taught the kids a little bit about the notion that you look at things for what they are rather than the novelty or the packaging or the kind of excitement of buying.
I love that. I think that's a great idea. And as somebody with a 14-month-old, I'm going to bookmark that and come back to it, Ben. So thank you.
That's right. The requests will start coming sooner than you'd like to
say. Don't tell me that. You make a statement near the end of your article. You say, with nothing to tell us who we are, we shop and we shop and we shop, filling our carts when we really just want to fill our lives. That's a kind of statement a dad would make to his kids, and I'm sure you make it to yours. What is the value you're trying to teach them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that my kids are quite ready for that one. It's a little dark. I really, with that statement, I'm trying to get at what I view as the more fundamental societal problem, which is associated with the epidemic of loneliness, which I'm sure is as familiar in Australia as it is here. You know, the average number of people living in a home has been shrinking for 150 years. The strength of connections among communities is decreasing. More and more people are spending their time at home, you know, watching Netflix, walking around on the street with their earphones in, their AirPods in, consuming content, looking on Instagram. I see it. I have to fight it myself to not be reading emails, looking on Instagram when parenting my own children. It is harder than ever to find deep, meaningful connections with other people. But deep, meaningful connections with other people are the only thing that matters in life at the end of the day. And so we are lacking that. And while we try to fill the void that we feel, that discontent that is associated with living in the world in which we live, we shop because it gives us, for a moment, that feeling of wholeness. But that feeling of wholeness can only come from people.
Ben, it's been great to speak to you this morning. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I love getting your input on this topic that affects our everyday lives. I don't think that anyone is immune to this. I'm going to pop it up on the website so people can have a listen back, so they can replay the toy store idea back to themselves when they need to organise something for the kids. Thank you for coming on and all the best.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.